What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, it's all about the iPad Pro M4 and iPad Air reviews. We talked all about that stuff last week. And we will also be diving in a little bit into the end of Google I.O. 2024. We won't be doing like all the news from I.O. because we, in fact, did a bonus episode of the podcast this week. So go back and check that out. We also did a bonus live stream for that stuff, too. So lots of fun stuff. That's us immediately responding to all the Google news right after it happened. So, you know, I think hotter takes, and we'll probably have some more thoughts on all that stuff soon. And also, we'll have a special guest to talk about the iPad reviews. But as always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcasts@engadget.com. If you want to send some notes, I would love to see more emails. Please fill up my inbox. Not spam. Real stuff. Real questions. We also typically live stream Thursday mornings around 10:30 a.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel. So join us. We've got a good crowd today. And it's always a fun time. You know, we do some Q&A. We do some like device show offs, too. And you don't get that in the audio form. Okay, let's move on to the iPad Pro, M4, and iPad Air reviews. Joining us to talk about them is Nathan Ingram from Engadget. What's up, Nate?
Hey, what's up, Devendra? What's up, Sherlyn?
What's up? How are you doing, Nate? Because you reviewed two devices over a single weekend. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, as you were saying, it's a crazy time in tech right now. We had I.O., we had Apple, we have Build, we have WWDC, we have Summer Game Fest, all in the next month. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, crazy stuff. It actually wasn't too bad, though. You know, it didn't have as much time as I might have liked to use them, but, you know, and this maybe teases what the whole question is that it's still an iPad, right? It's nicer, it's faster, the screen is bonkers, it's thinner. These are all the things that apply to the Pro, by the way. But ultimately, it's still an iPad, and that will determine, I think, how you feel about it. And it seems like the hot take anger cycle has been especially hot for this one. Would you agree?
I mean, there are a lot of takes, some self-inflicted wounds from Apple, but also, listen, this thing got, it's $200 more expensive than before. If you start to spec this thing up, you are getting into MacBook Pro territory.
I mean, the model that Apple sent me is $2,100 without the keyboard or the pencil.
That's without the keyboard,
yes.
Which is another
$350? Yeah. And the 13-inch model is actually $300 more than the old. Wait, no, I'm sorry. I take it back. You're right.
They were both $200. Yeah. In our reporting. But that is that price. Once you get to that point, it's like, this is a tablet. This is not a MacBook Pro. You know, I start to feel like there are issues there. Like we were talking about, like, Nate, ideally, you should be doing this recording from the iPad Pro to prove that this thing is a very capable, you know, mobile computer. Except when I think about it, I'm not sure you'd actually be able to record live audio plus also be on the live stream with the mic from the iPad Pro at the same time.
Yeah,
you'd have to try that out.
That's an interesting point because I read a good story on I think it's maxstories.net. There's a reporter there, Federico, who really loves iPads and digs into the software a lot.
Yeah.
He loves them, but he's also very critical about it. He wrote, you know, 5,000 words, but here are all the things Apple needs to fix with iPad OS. And the like debate that I've been seeing online is like some people are like, just let it be an iPad, man. It's fine. You know, it doesn't need to be a Mac. And like, that's true. But the things that he's laying out that don't work about it aren't just like, you know, philosophical differences in how software should work. It's like stuff that should have been fixed by now, like bugs. And, you know, so going back to the podcasting example, you can only have one audio stream playing. So
right.
Let's say you have like Apple right. Music playing and you go to a YouTube video, you want to have it on mute in the background. You can't. It'll stop your Apple Music and play the YouTube stream. So I don't know that I could hear our broadcast here and also record an audio stream at the same time. I don't think that would work.
We'd have to test it. Like at some point, we'll have to test some of this stuff.
If I had more time, I would have, but
broad takeaways from you. So you said you reviewed the iPad Pro and the iPad Air. Is the Pro just still too crazy expensive and
price bump? I don't know exactly who it's for, unless again you're somebody who has a really like iPad specific workflow that you like and you want the best hardware out there to do it on. You know, I get it. Like, don't get me wrong, it's gorgeous. I love using it, and it blew me away the first time I saw it. Like, I am shocked at how thin it is. I'm shocked at how light it is. It has a better chip than you can get in the MacBook Air right now.
Although I think insanity.
Right.
Yeah.
The screen is probably the nicest I've ever seen on a mobile device of any kind. And this brought me back to thinking about the introduction of the first iPad in 2010, when Steve Jobs said, he called it a magical device. He had like a nice, like very Apple phrase about it. And one of the things that it was our most advanced technology. And I don't think that was the case in 2010, but I do think today that this is most of, you know, it's got a brand new chip. It has the best screen. They've managed to cram these things into a package that doesn't really seem believable.
It only took 14 years for it to truly be their best technology, right?
You could have maybe said that about the last generation ones as well when they put the M1 in there. It's a really interesting, they're delivering on that promise. And it feels to me like Apple just kind of, they want to be able to do that to say they can do it, almost putting aside the practicalities of like who needs it or whatever.
Well, it's a hardware flex in every way, which Apple has always been good at. But it's not a software flex.
No.
And I feel like that's where we've criticized Apple quite a bit. Like, I just feel like the separate teams at Apple have always been like out of sync a little bit. And then we're not even talking about like the services, like the software services, like their cloud stuff has been messy for a long time too. I don't think, as much as I like syncing stuff to iCloud, I do that mainly for device backups, right? I don't like use iCloud like I use Google Drive or Dropbox or something. So Apple has all these, you know, differences.
I'll say at this point, so stuff like Photos works really well at this point. They've got that locked down as far as I'm concerned. Apple Music is a little hit or miss in terms of syncing some stuff sometimes, I've noticed. You know, it works fine as a Dropbox file saving thing, but I don't see a compelling reason to use it over, you know, Google Drive or Dropbox. Gotcha.
So just judging from your reviews, Nate, you really like the iPad Air.
Like, yeah, so
Air is the one.
Yeah, so the Air, for the first time, they made in a larger screen. It used to be just like the 10.9 or 11-inch model, and now they added a 13 for $200 more than the 11-inch. And so now I'm like, okay, I never would have bought a large iPad Pro before because it was starting at $1,100, now at $1,300, it's just too much money. But I can get a large screen Air for $800. They doubled the storage, now it's like a reasonable starting point. Bumped up the chip, put the camera on the landscape edge. When you add that all up, it's a pretty compelling machine, if you ask me. Obviously, the it's a standard LCD, not even the mini LED that you get on the old Pro or you know, a new MacBook Pro.
And no promotion, which
no
was
promotion,
low, like, high
so 60
or,
hertz. Yeah, so it's like a little bit of a bummer for sure. And like jumping between them, I notice. But like once I just sit down and start using it, you know, it's one of those things you'll just kind of forget about.
My question for you, Nate, we brought this up last week. We have seen prices for the iPad Pro, the M1, the previous gen. Is that M2?
Previous
now?
Was M2, but yeah.
M2. But I've seen prices for that drop to $599, the same as the new iPad Air.
Yeah.
And in that case, aren't you better off getting the old Pro with the promotion screen
Absolutely.
And like Face ID and everything? Okay.
Yeah. And I would say also, if you're in the market for an iPad, definitely check the like Apple refurbished section on their site. Has the same warranty. You can probably, I have to imagine they'll start dumping some M2 models in there soon. I will say that the more compelling thing, the more compelling upgrade to me is the new iPad Pro 11-inch, because the previous model also just had a standard LCD. It had ProMotion, so 120 hertz, but it didn't even have the mini LED that the big one did. So it went from like LCD to OLED, and like that change is just like, yeah, bonkers. Way, way nicer. But if you're just using it to watch, say, an Engadget live stream, you're probably fine just getting an Air.
Oh, man. Sherlyn, like, you have looked at all these devices, and also you are, you know, I know you like Google tablets. You like the other ecosystems. How do you feel about these things at this point?
The hardware is impressive, right? I think that in terms of hardware, the best competitor on the Android side is Samsung. Samsung's Galaxy Tab devices have been actually really good looking for longer than the iPad. Well, about the same amount of time, I think, that the iPad has.
Well,
been,
so Samsung, I went to a Samsung event in like 2013, maybe even 2012, where they put OLED, AMOLED, but they put OLED in the Galaxy Tab like S2 or S3. They had that event at like Radio City Music Hall. So like that stuff has been in there. I've had that device for like years and it's looked good forever because
their tablets have had beautiful displays for the longest time. And they've been very thin and light for a while too. Yeah. And then the other thing is I was more intrigued. I first of all, when you know the tandem OLED thing was being described, I was like, oh, I can't wait to see this in person. And I did see it with Nate in the office when we shot that video that we did. Gosh, I was very impressed definitely by the hardware. I will say that the most interesting thing to come out of all of this for me personally is the difference between Nate's take and Arrival Publications' take. If you compare headlines side by side,
I try not to do that for my own mental health. Really.
No, but it was quite on the nose in terms of a comparison. If you look at Nate's, it was very much like, my heart longs for the iPad Pro, but my wallet and head tell me the iPad Air is the one to get. Meanwhile, elsewhere on the internet, I'll shout, it's The Verge, right? Pierce's review, I think, was like, no, the iPad Pro is the one to get. And I think
I saw his iPad Air review said, you know, it's nice, but this isn't the one to buy. I think he's saying that for most people, the basic low-end iPad is the one to buy.
That's what I was going to ask you next, Nate. Because so now we have multiple tiers, and I've also always been, man, that base iPad is very nice because the screen is good enough. It is fast enough. It does a lot, and it's so much cheaper. Like the 10th generation iPad is now down to $349. I see sales bringing that down even more. You can do so much with that thing. Like I bought one of those last year and my daughter plays Minecraft on it. We do everything.
With the Touch ID on the,
With the Touch ID on the top, the camera on the other side. But it's such a do-everything device. You can get decent keyboard cases. I have a Logitech one. It's fine. It's no magic keyboard, but you could attach a keyboard case to it. So between that and the iPad Air, how are you thinking, Nate?
So I would say that, like, I think that David Pierce's take is a fair one there, that for most people, they're probably going to be happier with the cash in their wallet. But I do. So my take is that I've thought this for a long time. The Air has always been enough of a nice upgrade to get some pro-ish features while not going full, you know, hog spending $800 or $1,000 or $1,500 on an iPad, because the screen on the base one isn't laminated. And like, for me anyway, once I noticed that, I can't unsee it. And so that for me is like almost reason enough to get an Air.
It's like a bit of an Air gap, like a bit of a gap between the glass and the screen. Whereas as you step up, like that, it looks like the screen is painted on. And that's something only techies will appreciate, I guess. Like it just feels different. It hits different.
Yeah. And then, you know, the one thing that you can get on an Air in terms of software is that the base iPad doesn't support Stage Manager, so you can't get a more robust multitasking experience. On the smaller size, that's less important, because when I'm using like an 11-ish inch iPad, I don't use Stage Manager a ton, but I definitely like having the option. So that to me, again, kind of puts it out of the running for me. But I am not everybody for sure. I think I'm probably a little more of a I'm definitely an iPad fanboy. And if you just want one to like watch stuff, couch browse, play some games, the base one is definitely the one to get. If you have aspirations to do a little more work on it, I would say that the Air is the one to get, especially if you're interested in visual arts, because it supports the new Apple Pencil Pro, which is definitely better than the pencil experience you can get on the base. On the base iPad.
So we have a good explainer, by the way, of all the different pencils.
Yes. So yes.
Thanks to Jeff Dunn on our
team. Thanks to Jeff Dunn at Engadget. We didn't talk about this, Nate, but real quick, like, how is the Magic Keyboard? Do you like it? Does it feel laptop-like as Apple is proposing?
So the Air uses last generation Magic Keyboard, which I've used for a long time. It's a great typing experience, but it has a few little things about it that I don't love. The new one for the iPad Pro fixes basically all of that. It's thinner and lighter itself, so the whole package doesn't feel as kind of bulky. The keyboard still feels great. They added a function row. The trackpad is bigger. It is actually a haptic trackpad, so it's solid state, doesn't move, gives you kind of responses to other actions you do in iPad OS. I have like basically no complaints other than it's super expensive. But
it's so expensive.
But, you know, I literally use it every day. I get
that's,
it.
that's the thing. So the real question, I guess, like practically buying the cheapest iPad Pro, the 11 inch, $999 with a keyboard that is $300 with that one. It's about the price of a MacBook Air. Are you better off with a MacBook Air than you are with that thing? With the iPad Pro, or is it just like depending on your use case?
I think probably, but it depends on the use case. I had an interesting discussion with somebody on Threads, and the vibe is that reviewers are reviewing it from the perspective of being a very general computing device, whereas they believe that the way that it's used is going to be wildly different for every person. And that, you know, I think that, again, when you get into the stuff like visual arts, you know, yes, there's 100% things you can do in a Mac that you can't do or do as well on an iPad. But the opposite is true. Like, if you want to get into, like, drawing and stuff, there's absolutely no way that a Mac is better than an iPad, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Although you could get a Wacom tablet or something.
Right, but, like, I don't want
it. That's different. You don't want it. You don't want it.
Yeah. No, I mean, get that's it. True. But that's kind of the way I try to think about it. It's like, okay, just because the use cases aren't there for me doesn't mean they don't exist for other people.
But I think the software complaints are true. Like, I would feel better about saying, hey, this is a really interesting mobile computing device if iPadOS felt more like, just felt more capable, I guess, better at multitasking. Like, when I'm, the thing that keeps me as like a laptop user or a desktop user is that a desktop OS just feels like, oh my God, I have 20 windows. I have so much stuff going on. I can zip over here, you know, be recording a stream, do some video stuff, do some Slack stuff. I can do all this stuff. I'm sitting in front of a 32-inch OLED, I don't know, screen right now on my desktop. And you just can't do that on a tablet, but you can do some of that on a 13-inch, you know, laptop. And I just don't know when we'll get there. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say that since I got the iPad Pro, I've used it for almost everything, including hooking it up to monitors. So when I am like running news, I'll have TweetDeck and Slack on one screen, and then I'll have, you know, our CMS and Feedly and other things on the iPad itself. And like, yeah, it's not perfect. There's a few kind of quirks about like what I think, like if I tap on an icon, I think it should do one thing and it sometimes does another. But the experience, I mean, it's more there than you might think, I would say. But I also get that like, it's not necessarily going to be better. It's just kind of different. And if you've got things set up the way you like it, like, you know, change it just because you want to change. Like, it has to be better, right?
Awesome. So broad takeaways, Nate. iPad Air, great for more people, you'd say. iPad Pro is just very nice hardware. Yeah.
It fixed the lingering issues I had with the last model for the most part. And I would give it a wholehearted recommendation. And the Air, I'm like, if you got the budget and you just want to splash, like, yeah, go nuts. Get the Pro. It's a good time. But it's just such a, it's a very luxury device for sure.
It's a very, like Apple just sometimes leans on the extravagance at this point. Like I dream of having an iPad Pro, but I can't justify that. It's really hard to justify that. I don't know, Sherlyn, like where do you have less at this point?
I was going to say, Dev, you've walked it back since your editorial last week.
Well, no, my editorial was, I think I want an iPad. Did you read the editorial, Nate?
No, sir? I just looked at the
headline. Did you read the conclusion, which was essentially,
yeah.
What I'm saying is that as much as I want it, it's like practically Apple has not proven that this hardware has justified this price, and the iPad Air is right there, you know, and the base iPad is right there. Sherlyn, where do you stand?
I like the idea of the iPad Pro. If only I had the sort of money to throw around.
So much money.
I think there is some, you know, we talked about how the base storage for some of these models has doubled. Finally, they're not like measly and matched. 128,
it's 256 now, right? So
yeah, Pro, so it's now 256 to start for the what, Pro, right, Nate? Yeah.
Pro is 256, Air is 128.
Which is still not enough for like a laptop, you know?
If I'm going to get the iPad Pro, not for like a work replacement machine, because iPadOS, we talked briefly about like it's not a good like my multitasking environment just yet. And I'm so much of a PC user anyway. However, yeah, like if I had, you know, what's the definition now? Musk money, like a Chunkster wallet?
I think you'd probably do more if you had Musk money, if you had like billionaire money, you know?
I would buy a spaceship, sure. But I know friends who are well off enough that like this sort of thing always tempts them. So I think, yeah, if I had it. But long-winded way of saying that I think the iPad, like the question always is, who's the iPad Air for? I think I've heard that question asked a few times. And it's like, for me, right? I don't want to have the 10th gen iPad because that's boring. And I can actually afford a little bit more for a slightly nicer thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's where I stand. But also, I don't use a tablet. I'm just not that sort of, even also, though I could probably play more Match Factory on an iPad.
When I think of iPads too, I also think of like, hey, this is a really nice portable external display for my MacBook, because that's something you can do. You can have your iPad sitting right there. And the weird magic of like, is it Sidecar? Is the tech that does that? If you put your iPad next to it, like you just shove your mouse over and your mouse will go there, like without even like thinking about it. So that sort of thing is like what makes me think like a MacBook Air plus an iPad Air would be a really nice travel combo.
You know? I like it.
Gives me touchscreen and gives me like a portable, nice typing device too. Anyway, thank you for joining us, Nate. Where can people find you online these days?
Yeah, so I'm on Threads mostly at Nate Ingram. And obviously you can email me at nathan@ngadget.com if you're so inclined as well.
Oh, really?
Aww.
I'm putting it out there.
Yeah, why not? Bring it. Any iPad it. Questions, hit me up.
All right. Thank you so much, Nate.
Thank you.
Let's move on to some other news, and let's just wrap up Google I.O. a bit. And if you were watching, you're listening, folks, for us to talk about Google I.O., go back and listen to the previous episode, because we did a bit of a bonus episode there. We hit all the main news, like all the major new AI models and everything. But I did want to ask you, Sherlyn, like, we are done with I.O. now. We've seen a bunch of coverage. Sam and Chris have tested Project Astra, which is the really cool, like, real-time AI assistant that they showed off, which is more of a concept at this point. But it's cool. They played with it. Any major takeaways from I.O. now that we're done?
Look, yes, we did go over some of the, you know, mm-hmm. announcements on our little live stream, quick live stream on Tuesday, but Wednesday was day two, and that was yesterday. And they saved a lot of Android 15 news for day two as well. You can catch up on Engadget.com, but some like high level, you know, just breakdown of what announced about Android 15 on the second day of I.O. Number one, Android's Circle to Search can now help students solve their math and physics homework. Now, I think Sundar or someone or Samir Samat on the main keynote on day one sort of alluded to or hinted at this, but basically Circle to Search, which is a feature they introduced on S24 Ultra this year, where you can just screenshot anything on your screen and just kind of circle parts of it to search. It's got a new capability. You can understand, you know,
cheat on your homework, apparently.
Exactly, basically, right? And there's a lot of potential like questions we need to ask there. Carissa Riley pointed out a few like concerns during our live blog, but you know, we haven't had time to chew on and ruminate just because there's so much going on, which we will get to. Android 15 will also make it harder for phone thieves to steal your data with the release of the second beta of Android 15. We're getting theft detection, AI-powered theft detection, Google Play fraud protection.
Say, watch out, phone thieves.
Just yeah,
hold on thieving, because then you can't be stopped.
Basically, mm-hmm. yeah, it's basically using AI to predict phone thefts and therefore lock things up accordingly. What? So Google says its algorithms can detect motions associated with theft, which
interesting. Well, yeah, I cannot imagine the false positives here. Like, you're running out the door. Swipe. Oh, my God.
Bye. Stolen.
You yoink it out of your partner's hand to be like, oh, I got to show you this meme. Cut. Your phone is being stolen.
Let me give you a few examples from our article on Engadget.com by Will Shanklin, by the way. So apparently, Google says its algorithms can detect motions associated with theft, like grabbing the phone and bolting, biking, or driving away. Android 15 handset recognizes one of these situations. The phone screen will quickly lock, making it much harder for the phone snatcher to access your data.
Pretty good. Yeah, that's good.
It's smart. You can also say the phone detection, the theft detection lock didn't like kick in. Somehow this, you know, pickpocket was like smooth enough to not trigger that action. You can use the fallback remote lock feature. It's been updated slightly to allow you to remotely lock the phone screen with the completion of just your phone number and the completion of a quick security challenge. So the security challenge is more to help you prevent the situation where you forget your own password for Find My, etc.
I feel like we can make this feature better, Sherlyn. Like, what else can you do to prevent somebody from stealing your phone? Like, should it automatically recognize if you shout, "Stop, thief!" Like, will it just like lock
Stop!
Down?
Stop!
Shut
Teach
it down!
Phone. God, we're every time I watch a movie now, that's gonna suck, right? Like, that's what's happening with like the A word assistant or the G word assistant or the S word assistant.
It's all terrible. I mean, they have ruined children's names, like these names, because they are now a command for devices.
Two more pieces of news from the day two keynote. One is an update coming to Android for cars that would make paying attention to the road a tiny bit easier. I'm just like pausing to make sure I read this right. So select car models will be getting a suite of new entertainment apps like Max and Peacock. I don't know why. Actually, it's not easier. It's harder, isn't it? Yeah, this is harder. The car OS is getting new apps and screencasting.
Rivian put out the news because it runs on Android Auto. Yeah, so yeah. That's kind of...
You can play Angry Birds.
You can play
on cars
Angry Birds.
With Google built in.
Or you could like... stream your YouTube. Like, I think there's built-in YouTube now. That's kind of cool because those things have big-ass screens in the middle. Yeah.
Exactly. Riven's actually the first to get this feature with more manufacturers to come. So you can, stream content from your phones and your tablets to that main screen. So that was one more piece of news coming just to the like the Android Auto side of things. And finally, hey, Devendra, have you ever wondered what happened to Wear OS?
I mean, I think about that every day when I go to sleep. Yeah. So whatever happened. This is I think about all of Google's dead devices every day.
It should make you happy to learn that Wear OS 5 was announced on day 2 of Google I/O.
And the developer
preview is coming out. Yeah. And
I saw the excitement in the streets, I guess. Like everybody.
I know. I was out there cheering. Yeah. Wear OS 5 will bring, I think one of the main things it's bringing is promised improvements to battery life. Now, we will see. I truly do not know. So that's just kind of a download of all of the Google I/O day 2 news from the Android team. I mean, there is also like Nest announced that they've opened up their home API so that anyone can basically make an app for your home devices. If it sounds a little dense right now, just there are details are on Engadget.com. I'm trying to power through all of this because there's so much other news. Because yesterday was global accessible. Well, no, sorry. Today, as we're recording this, May 16th, Thursday, the third Thursday of May every year, is Global Accessibility Awareness Day, GAAD. And everyone also has a bunch of updates. So yesterday / the day before at I/O, Google also announced this new like hands-free mouse feature is coming to Android. It's called, I'm trying to look for
Project
the name
Game
of
Face.
It.
It is Thank in you. Our show notes. They actually announced it last year, but now it's
yes, but this
the
is now
API
coming
is
to
available to Android developers. So that's cool.
Yeah, so there's that. And then, I mean, you know, there's some more news that's coming later today.
I cannot talk about just yet. I mean, but yeah, it's Google Week,
similar,
basically.
Yeah, it's a Google thing, and it's like similar vibes to like Astra and accessibility. Just, you know, keep an eye on Engadget.com.
Keep an eye on it. I mean, okay, yeah. We're waiting on Astra. Our Astra hands-ons were... both Sam and Chris got to test it out, and they seem like this is cool, but it doesn't look as like shockingly fun or great.
It was
or
underwhelming,
interesting yeah. as like the demo yeah. video Google showed off. So,
I will point out, I will point out that Sam Rutherford went to the booth at I/O to test out some of their AI demos, and one of the stations was set up to like rate your soccer kick or something, and Sam kicked a shot aimed at this orange square on the top left of the back wall or something. And Sam hit the box, like the bottom right corner of the box, but he hit it. And the AI assigned him a score of, do you want to guess?
See?
Out of 100?
See, I don't know, 80.
Oh, it gave him, you know what? You were very close, 79. And Sam was pretty upset. Because
we're all a
it's
bunch
a
of
fail by some of our standards.
I mean, listen, if you were, if you were saying, "Hey, kick this ball in a second," I used to play soccer. Did Sam ever play, or he's just kicking the ball?
I think he might have played when he was younger.
Somebody who could play soccer. But you know, on a whim, like just it's like those moments on the street where like a ball comes your way. It's like, oh, I can show off. I can do something. Right? This was Sam's moment.
Maybe. I mean, I was more trained as a goalkeeper, but there we go. The general vibe I got that was from Sarissa, Sam and Carissa, was was Sarissa.
Or Cam.
Was that, it was underwhelming.
All right. That's Google I/O. And honestly, that feels like the response to the initial keynote, too. Again, folks, check out our previous episode where we dove into all the main Google I/O news. Let's move on, too, because there was something kind of related to Google I/O the day before. Google I/O kicked off. OpenAI was just like, hey, we're just gonna put some cold water on all your hot AI news. They announced ChatGPT, or they announced GPT-4o. The O stands for Omni. This is a new model that's gonna be available for free, which is also kind of weird because the people paying for ChatGPT Pro, right, or whatever the premium thing is, now there's more features on the free thing. This is the weird thing, like, of the state of AI we're in. You're paying more for something sometimes, but now you could just go to the free ChatGPT or the free GPT-4o, and it is a more natural human-computer interface. I have not tested this yet, but I saw the demo video where essentially somebody from OpenAI is talking to their phone, and it's having, like, a conversation, like, hey, how's it going? Nice hoodie. Nice, looking around. Like, looks like you're in a conference room. It is a lot of the stuff Google is promising in Project Astra, but, like, I think dumbed down and also a little weirdly flirty. Like, a little like, yeah, it's like Weird Science, right? Where dudes program their dream woman in a way. And the OpenAI thing feels like they have programmed their dream, you know, assistant. Who's like, oh, make you feel better about your wardrobe. And you're so cool and you're so fun. How did you feel about this thing, Sherlyn?
I did not look at it because it's happening literally. Literally, it was happening on Monday where we were in like insane Google I.O. prep land. And I just know that we heard a lot about that video. And people were like, is it flirting with me now? And I was just like, of course y'all respond to it like this. Like, flirty. Of course this is how y'all responded. Like,
yeah. It's sort of like where, I don't know, there's those experiences where like, oh, this person's a little flirty. It was like, oh, it's a barkeeper or something. Like it's somebody serving at the bar. So like, they want you to tip them more. they want something from you.
Yep, what is exactly. This AI want exactly. From
man? Can I trust it? I don't know. But anyway, this is out. Also in OpenAI news, the co-founder, Ilya Sutskever, announced that he's leaving OpenAI. He was one of the people who voted to kick out Sam Altman in that weird drama last year. He's also joining, somebody else is also leaving, John Lake, another key scientist, is leaving to join like another company. Bit of brain drain there at OpenAI. I don't know if it's like bad blood from the Sam Altman thing or if it's just like Ilya Sutskever going to do their own thing, because this tends to happen in the AI ecosystem. DeepMind, you know, was bought by Google. The co-founder of DeepMind went off and like did his own thing. And then that the people running that were just picked up by Microsoft, basically. And now that dude, Mustafa Soleiman, is running Microsoft AI. So I don't know. There's a lot of hopping around, but
a lot of movement. Yeah,
a lot of movement. OpenAI is not slowing down. Can we talk about Thunderbolt, Trillin? Did you see this news?
No.
This is
like,
I mean,
let me tell you how always, much other folks, news there was later. But go
sure,
on.
Sure, sure, sure. As always, folks, Trillin, doing the homework here in our links.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Basic PC. You know what makes me feel good? Something I understand. Not like ChatGPT, not like GPT AI models, which nobody knows how they work, even the people who make them. It's like a soup. That stuff is like a cauldron of data and stuff they're just throwing at it, and it's getting us interesting outputs. I understand Thunderbolt. I understand plugging a cable into a thing and it makes a connection. Intel announced this thing called Thunderbolt Share, which is something we should have had for the past decade. You plug a Thunderbolt cable into one computer, you plug it into another computer, you can send files between them. Amazing. Yeah. High speed, can't direct file connection. Amazing. That's cool. You can also, Intel like went a little harder on this than I expected them to. There's also like a bit of remote control you could do. So if you had like your desktop and you Thunderbolt share to a laptop that you have, you could also like remotely control that, which could be, that sort of stuff could be useful for streamers who may want to like control their actual studio machine, but also be directly on their own machine. A couple of features like that. When I say the word FireWire to you, Sherlyn, what does that mean?
Oh, I remember FireWire.
FireWire?
I don't know if I love it. I remember having a lot of struggles with it.
I remember loving FireWire because that was the initial.
It was fast, right?
It was super fast. That was like late 90s, I believe, and also throughout the 2000s. That was like Apple's claim to fame. They had this sick, super fast data connection that PCs did not have. USB was far slower and far less reliable. But the thing about FireWire is that you could plug a Mac into another Mac and turn the other Mac into like a target disk and just access that full hard drive. And as an IT person, that was the best thing in the world. I could go in. Everyone's like, oh my God, my Mac won't boot. Save my files. I go in 5 minutes later, save a thesis, save like somebody's paper. And that sort of stuff made me a hero when I was an IT worker because it just worked the way it should. Yeah. And doing that on a PC was much harder. You never had that sort of like direct basic access with cables. So anyway, this feature seems very cool. The only problem is that Intel is Intel. Okay, so there's a special logo. You have to look for the Thunderbolt thing, the lightning, but also like two squares around it to know that this machine supports Thunderbolt Share. It will only work on Thunderbolt 4 ports on systems from some manufacturers. I just wanted to ask Intel, like, what the hell? Just put it out there. Just make it available. But they essentially want PC manufacturers to pay them to get access to the software to unlock more capabilities from the Thunderbolt port. So it's a cool idea. You may see it on some computers, but like so many things, especially from Intel, you may not even know it exists. Like the Intel phone syncing stuff. I don't think anybody's actually using that app. Everyone's using on Windows is using like the Microsoft built-in one. I think there was one from Samsung too, right? Like people are using to sync their Androids. Anyway, this is cool. Controlling PC, drag and dropping files, syncing files. Syncing files like the way you used to have to sync OneDrive. So I remember, with like network shares on Windows, you could set them up to be automatically synchronized. You could do that with this. It's kind of cool. Yeah. Transfer data to new, migrate a computer, migrate one computer to a new computer. Cool stuff. That's
Thunderbolt. I like the share. Idea, so that's good, yeah.
Although, yeah, except, you know, Macs have been doing that forever because it's just, your stuff is in the cloud. Your stuff is in the cloud, or you could plug a Mac into another Mac and just do the whole thing. So, okay. It's a cool feature. I hope people will actually use it. I wish Intel was a little more open about how they just made their tools available. Sherlyn, you had this story. You wrote a story about a surprise feature coming to iPhones and iPads.
Okay. So, I will try my best to not rant about everything else and focus on the news. Okay, news. So Global Accessibility Awareness Day, like I mentioned earlier, this episode is happening today, May 16th. Every year around this time, Apple announces a slew of new features that are improving the accessibility of its general inclusive design features, right? So some of these, by the way, usually get like teed up or like previewed on Global Accessibility Awareness Day, which is always before WWDC, and then they do then roll out with the next version of iOS or iPadOS. So this is potentially a sneak preview at some features coming to iOS 17. For example, iOS whatever is next, 18. For example, last year they did Personal Voice and then it rolled out with iOS 17. So this time around, we're getting eye tracking built in the native front-facing camera on your iPad or iPhone. This is, to me, a big deal because, listen, iPad and iPhone have supported eye tracking before with connected devices like, say, a Tobii eye tracker or that sort of thing. And the UI has always been like you would gaze around, you would select elements by looking. And this also, to me, builds on VisionOS stuff, by the way, because VisionOS has impressive eye tracking.
But that's so because it has actual eye tracking hardware.
Exactly. It has an actual camera.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So, but now we're using just a simple, what's their name for their front camera? Don't they have a special name for their front camera all the time? Face ID.
I mean, someone it's a Face ID sensor, but sure, whatever.
Yeah, it's a sensor. Anyway, the front camera, the 12
front
megapixel
camera. Yeah.
One. Yeah, they can basically use that to track. So in the picture that was shared during, like, as part of the, like, media kit, you see a person that has physical disabilities facing an iPad, presumably using their eyes to navigate the OS. This is because iOS and iPadOS have a layer built on top of them to support this sort of navigation. So when you want to select something, you dwell. So you kind of like linger on an icon. I haven't seen this in action just yet. But if you're already familiar with this layout by using an eye tracking device that's connected, sort of similar to how you would connect a Switch input controller, you'll be familiar with how this works, but now you just don't need to buy that additional hardware because sometimes insurance companies don't support or don't you know, pay for this sort of stuff. So I think that was like the leading news item as part of Apple's accessibility like set of updates, but there was more. We're getting music haptics coming to starting like millions of songs in Apple Music, and Apple's also making an API available so that other apps can make music haptics a thing. So I assume things like Spotify or like YouTube Music, but also maybe gaming developers can use that to improve sort of the overall experience. You get vibrations, you get like they are saying refined vibrations. Basically, I think it's mostly like, you know, how to use the Taptic engine on board in different ways to really fill out that sound experience for people who are deaf or hard of hearing. Another thing I thought was very interesting in this set of news, two more things. One is vocal shortcuts, where you can actually use, you can use on-device machine learning to create specific custom voice models for utterances or maybe words or phrases to trigger certain actions. So instead of using Siri, like not having to be like, yo, Siri girl, do this for me, right? You can just, and it will like lock your screen, or like, oi, and it'll be like theft detection. I don't know. You know what I mean? And I mean, that's intriguing. Haven't tried it out. Want to check it out. Voice is also getting an improvement thanks to Listen for Atypical Speech. So it's worked with the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and the Beckman Institute there, which is also collaborating with the likes of Google and Microsoft and Amazon to improve speech recognition for people who have atypical speech. And so, you know, Siri's getting that with upcoming software updates, I believe. And then I want to point out vehicle motion cues. So basically, if you're the sort of person that gets car sick when looking at their phone or iPad when in a moving vehicle, when enabled or when turned on, and all of these features are for you to turn on through the accessibility settings, by the way, they are these little dots that appear on top of your screen, and they'll move in reaction to the movement in the vehicle. So because motion sickness is basically a conflict between what your body is sensing and what your brain sees, right? If you're looking at something that's stationary and your body is moving, you get sick. So with the dots on the screen moving in reaction to the car, you're supposed to have like less of that disconnect or that dissonance, I guess, and alleviate some of that motion sickness. So these for me were the like four main items, with eye tracking being the biggest one, but there's so many more. I have a piece with all the details on Engadget.com. Just Google like Engadget iPad eye tracking. You'll see it. Just a lot of really interesting news from Apple.
Good job writing up a piece in the middle of all this hell too. Like what?
It was very fun. In addition, Xbox also, by the way, this week had a piece of news for GAAD. It was about the Proteus Xbox controller. It is a modular gamepad designed by the nascent peripheral company BioWave, and it's part of the Design for Xbox program. It is a group of cubes about the size of your palm, and they can be connected to each other in a wide variety of configurations. You have interchangeable face plates, which, you know, have standard controller buttons or analog sticks and a directional pad. Basically extremely customizable, modular. It's available for pre-order now, and at a special price of $255, will ship in the fall. I mean, I think that's really interesting. Microsoft has been doing stuff, you know, for gamers especially. But this is another way. This is not specifically Microsoft, but, you know, another way for Xbox to be like the console for gamers with disabilities, maybe. Not entirely convinced, but yeah, there we go. And then, you know, bunch of other news for Global Accessibility Awareness Day coming soon. There's really not much more I can publicly say.
Oh, man. Do you know all the secrets? All of the secrets. Okay. Well, thank you for all those updates. I love that I remember every year that we have a bunch of accessibility news around this. I'm glad this is a thing, and I'm glad companies are paying attention. That's cool.
Kind of want to do a roundup, but only if I have the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. We are, low on manpower, basically, at Engadget, but there's just, the news just doesn't stop. It's like trying to make sense of, a water hose just like flowing out, and we're just trying to like make news out of it. Let's move on to some other stuff. There's an interesting story this week. The Biden administration has quadrupled import tariffs for Chinese EVs. So to the point where the tax on Chinese EVs has jumped from 25% to 100%. The White House claims this will protect American manufacturers. This is all kind of tied to the weird TikTok stuff too. Like, it's like the American government worried about Chinese businesses and Chinese government influence and things like that. Like, how do you feel about this, Sherlyn? Because this also affects semiconductors. It affects solar cells. The solar cell tariff has jumped 50% it has doubled. So that is bad news for like cheap solar cells, which people have been using and relying on. Like, that's been a good thing. Not much of a hacking potential there, honestly, like something like TikTok. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I've complained in previous episodes, right, that I think there are a lot more insidious things that come to the U.S. from China, like Temu.
like Temu. That impacts like Temu, our children and our shoppers, yeah.
Exactly. And I think TikTok certainly has, like, a potential for exploitation. And so it's definitely, like, worth carefully looking at it. But, like, solar, anything in manufacturing, yes, it is nice to be able to retain most of it in America, but you can't like, you just can't ignore and avoid the fact that people just go to China and India and other parts of Asia for cheaper manufacturing. That's it. That's like, if you continue to focus on gains and capitalism and profit, you're just going to keep ending up with goods made in China. And you're going to like, I'm sorry to use a fashion slash pop culture example, but Good American, which is Khloe Kardashian's brand of clothing, started out being like made in America, and now they're made elsewhere. I wonder why.
For major reasons. I mean, I don't know if that's always, certainly like the manufacturing thing is true, Shulman, but also, I feel like this is heavy-handed and everything. It is like unstoppable, the amount of like cheap hardware, cheap just electronics coming out of China. And it's like the only thing the U.S. government can do is be like, hey, let's make this more expensive, you know, because our businesses, our local businesses can't succeed. I don't know if that will actually help local businesses or just make it harder for people to get access to things. I am personally just annoyed about the solar thing. Like the cheap Chinese EVs, actually, I don't know if those would actually be great in America. Like there are many of them and they look very nice because I see the TikTok videos about them. People are saying like, oh, look at all the cool stuff we have in our Chinese cars that would not be like street legal in America, like reclining back seats that recline all the way while people are driving. Not great if you're in a crash, okay? A seatbelt won't really help you when you're fully sleeping. But stuff like that, like I've seen that stuff floating around. I don't know if that would actually help. And also we've seen really cheap, really crummy EVs coming from other companies, like the one from the Vietnamese billionaire. They've tried to, I forget the name of that, but that is the one where car reviewers have tried and been like, this is the worst thing I've ever touched. Just like barely works as a car. So we're seeing cheap EVs popping up and being unsafe and not great purchases either. So I don't know.
I do want to point out that Deepro9 in the chat, first of all, is like, I love Temu. Okay. Good luck. And then Kevin says in the chat says, next will be DJI. They will tax DJI heavily. And you know what? Honestly, surprised they haven't yet.
Like, I'm surprised they haven't yet, but also
they're the leading drone company right now. Come on.
And that's where you're like, if we're worried about potential Chinese hacking,
yeah, exactly, surveillance
or certain things, because DJI is sending, you can send your video to the DJI cloud, and where is the DJI cloud, everybody? I don't know where it is. I don't know how safe.
Literally
it is.
Literally
in the cloud. So anyway, this is a whole thing. We'll probably be talking more about this, but the main thing I'm sad about is the solar cells, because I'm somebody who is thinking about solar eventually. We have seen the price of solar drop a lot over, even compared to like 5 years ago. And this is something that could help people. Like, we're facing the climate crisis for sure, but also our power grid stinks in America. So a lot of people, especially in Texas, it would really be helpful if they spent a little bit of money invested in solar, maybe a battery, a local battery, to keep their house functioning during extreme weather conditions. I live in the South and we have brownouts and blackouts all the time because the grid is just not that strong. So solar is something, if we made it cheap, made it widely available, there are tax breaks to getting solar on your home right now. That would be a great thing. It would be great for the consumers, but it will also be great for the environment and the local environment too. You know, less reliance on actual power plants. So that's a shame. Hopefully American manufacturers will be able to compete. What's up?
Just gonna point out that exactly. A, American manufacturers. B, my uncle is, you know, owns a company that makes solar panels in Singapore. Okay. So if y'all ever need an external supplier, I'm kidding.
Hey, U.S. government, if you want some non-Chinese suppliers.
Non-Chinese, ethnically Chinese, historically up. Chinese, sure. But not, you know, by country. We're Singapore, very different, very not corrupt.
Yes.
That I know of.
Very uncorrupt.
And then Kevin says in the chat, also points out rightly, that transparent solar is actually coming, and that'll be quite interesting to
that me. Is super. I mean, transparent solar is super hot, but also like the panels themselves, I don't know if you know this, Sherlyn, but they just don't look as bad as they used to. They're not like blue, bright blue grids with like white lines and stuff. Like now they're just like solid black. And if you put a solid black thing up on your roof, that you would barely notice it. They're also like solar roof tiles and stuff too, which are great, but super expensive. So I'm not even talking about those. Anyway. I hope our solar industry does not fall apart. This is also something like the coal workers and people working in dirty fuels right now, oil workers, like people are training up to be solar installers and solar like repair folks. And that whole industry is something we really need. Anyway, final story, Trillin, you were really intrigued. I don't know why you were intrigued by this, but okay.
Look, listen.
Uber will soon let you reserve a shuttle from concerts. Trillin is planning how you're going to attack the next Taylor Swift thing, I guess.
It is, for me, a way to talk about my general observations about Uber, rideshare, and that sort of space. Yes, Uber announced this week. By the way, it had an event this week. Okay, like we didn't have enough. This was on yesterday, May 15th.
Uber. Yeah.
So if you're thinking, like I've known about the Uber event ahead of time for a while now. So it's like, I knew this was coming, part of my stress, but not such a big deal because it's one main piece of news that, yes, it will let you reserve like a seat on a shuttle. It's basically Google. And I got a sense of this because I was recently able to chat with some people at Uber, right? I get the sense that they're paying a bit more attention to their general responsibility to their user and driver base, right? So they're understanding that they have some awareness that Ubers have gotten very expensive, whether it's a ride, whether it's a delivery, for example.
I mean, it's also they are the ones making Ubers more expensive because they have raised prices.
Right. And so that's why they want to bring it down. But they don't have a really feasible way of bringing it down on the solo rides experience that I know of anyway. Because like every city is really different. Every state is really different. I don't want to bother to get into all of that on this podcast or this episode anyway. But their idea is that at least in states or cities or countries where public transport is like hugely missing and lacking, that Uber can come in and fill kind of a gap.
Basically, so rebuild public transport. Like that's
exactly
what I'm
but right. And so this kind of look, okay. I can see conflicts of interest. I can see like what, but I think there's a general sort of awareness at Uber that a few things need to change. And how quickly and how well they change really depends on execution. But I think that Uber had a shift in its leadership 2017-ish with their new CEO, who seems much more grounded, much more like accountable. So maybe. And I've honestly just felt like I used to like think Lyft was the better of the two. And now I'm like, I don't know that neither of them are better than the other.
They are both
of, like,
kind of
ethics.
Crummy. I will say Uber still has the worst like beginning stories of just how brutal and how crummy it was as
start,
a company.
It was awful. Yeah. But it seems like they're trying to make changes. I mean, so affordability is one of the things. They're also like doing the busing. Look, in general, sharing a ride or getting on a bus or whatever, right? Better for the environment, better for the economy in terms of like your own wallet. Personally, the struggle here for Uber is that people don't want to share rides, really. And I'm on that train because
I'm
Uber very scared
pool
of germs.
Era. I do not. No. I don't miss
the exactly.
Uber pool era.
Exactly. So they're looking at now, instead of Uber pool, they call it Uber X Share is the service. I think. And I'm just like, I still don't want to.
It's not so great. Although I guess technically it is better than just being stuck with like just the Uber driver, right? If you don't know if you can trust them, but at least they have ratings. At least they're like, you know who's coming in, not that randos. Yeah.
And you're, I guess you're only exposing yourself to like one or two people at a time, even though it's in very close proximity. You're sharing air. If one of you farts, the other will smell it. I'm just saying. So that's why I can't. But anyway, like all I'm saying is there was news from Uber this week and it's worth paying attention to what these companies are doing. And I think that there's some sort of
These companies that have helped kill the idea of public transportation in a lot of like governments, city governments and state governments have taken money away from public transport because they're like, hey, people are just taking Ubers now. Like we don't have to actually spend money investing in our stuff. So the idea that you can like just like, hey, rent a big ass bus for your friend or like rent a seat on a bus going to and from the concert, like that's kind of cool because we have not solved these things. Like, let me tell you, here in Atlanta, Sherlyn, like when there's a big concert, like when Beyonce's concert was happening, you can't drive into
it's
the city.
It's a nightmare.
Atlanta is just like LA and in fact with far less infrastructure. So the traffic is horrible. So the only time a lot of people actually use Atlanta's metro, the MARTA, is when there are concerts. And then you see people parking at like suburban lots and then come in. It's like Long Island people in New York basically, but park and come in. And hey, people are actually using it because that is what this infrastructure was built for. That's kind of cool.
I gotta say, this shuttle thing, by the way, yes, public transport. And if shuttle were to find a space, if Uber's shuttle service were to find a space, it would be in like concert rides, right? It would be in like airport transfers.
Well, they're also saying like work, like people, it's like the jobs that have like fun shuttles to send you to work. Like,
yeah, they used to.
You could grab a seat to get sent to your job, I guess, in the morning. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Yeah. I mean, like, even in New York, where there's a solid transportation, like public transportation system, not the best in the world, but not bad, right? After good, a ball yeah. game at the Met, after a ball game at the Yankee Stadium, after like all of that stuff, right? It's just insane to get out of there. It's wild, whether it's cabs or cars or the subway. Yeah.
You just wait. At least the thing I like about the New York system, where I think the first time I went to Germany, right, we were covering IFA or something. I was like, oh, I'm just going to take the train over to where it is. And you get there, and I'm sorry, Germans, but that is the most confounding system. Like, to navigate Berlin, having never been there, like, the separate
lines. The S-Bahn or the U-Bahn?
All the buns. Like, I go down there.
And it's not even the good kind of bun, which is delicious.
I just wanted to cry looking at that subway map. I just want to get to my hotel. I can't. What's the fee? Which way? I know where I need to go. New York's not that bad.
So, get your Uber. Yeah.
Yeah, get your Uber. I just waited in the cab line. Like, that's what I ultimately had to do. Let's go. Let's move on. Got a quick listener question from Mark Dell. Thank you, Mark Dell, for being a loyal
for sending an email. Yes.
Live stream.
Podcastandgadget.com.
Podcastandgadget.com. Thank you for being a loyal listener and also live stream attendee. So we're gonna spill all your stuff here. He starts saying, I need your help. I have a bunch of tech stuff lying around that I don't need anymore. I'm just going to look around my office. Yeah. Like old controllers for video game systems and outdated USB and Bluetooth keyboards, I'm torn between just throwing them away and feeling guilty about wastefulness because I know there are people out there who would love to have them, especially retro items that can't be bought anymore. Do you have any suggestions? Surely you guys must go through this more than most people. How do you handle your old stuff? Let me just tell you, Mark, do not send old tech. Do not give old tech to people because it depends on what it is.
Yeah.
Unless you want to be the tech support for that person, like, I got this 20-year-old mouse he sent me, and it's not working. The Bluetooth's not working. It's not connecting. Don't. Just stop. If the company doesn't support it, you don't want to support it anymore. So that's step one. Step two is electronic recycling is a thing in most cities. You have to figure out how to use it, where to take your stuff, or sometimes there are events. Best Buy. I don't know if Best Buy is still taking stuff, but for the longest time, they have been taking electronics. You could just take a thing and dump it there. When I was working in IT hero over here, I used to have to like build a car, basically a car-sized cardboard box. And I would go through the entire campus and just be like, old computers, I will like hand truck them away from offices, dump them in this box. But also before doing that, I had to pull out the hard drives and destroy the hard drives and then dump it all in the box. And then every couple months we bought it, you know, we rented a company to come pick all this stuff up. So anyway, electronic recycling is the way. If you cannot take stuff to electronic recycling, TaskRabbit exists. On-demand services like that exist. I have totally TaskRabbited. Here's a box of stuff I don't want in my apartment anymore. Please take it to the thing and send me the receipt. Send me a screenshot or something of the receipt that you often get. And that's been a thing.
So,
yeah.
I'm going to point out, Mark Dell, I agree that like recycling is the best way. I echo what Devendra said because sometimes I give old things away to people and then I find out it's dead, like unsupported. Yeah, won't
don't
even
do that.
Turn on.
Don't, do,
so, like,
just
don't start there.
Yeah.
The main thing is, some of the stuff that you think is valuable, consider selling on eBay or something like that. But Engadget.com has a piece called Where to Recycle Electronics.
Yes.
We have a guide. Best Buy is one of the first. And as of 2023, too, Best Buy also allows you to mail it in. You would need to pay some money to buy a small box for $23 or a medium box for $30. You can also recycle televisions and monitors, although a lot of them charge you some money for it if you don't bring it in yourself. There's also options like Staples. You've got Home Depot, Office Depot, Lowe's, Target that all handle that.
They
Amazon,
usually,
surprisingly,
by the way, all these only accept a couple items. So I'm looking at
Best Buy
stuff.
Yeah, you have to be
stuff.
Careful. So
it's
the
like
guide
three
has all the
yeah.
details.
Yeah.
Right. But there's just like more options than you might actually be aware of. Obviously, go back to the manufacturer that made the product, that sold you the product. Amazon, Apple, Dell, Epson, HP, all, you know, has some sort of buyback / trade-in
sometimes,
program.
Yeah, yeah.
And the states themselves might have some important information that you might need to, you know, pay attention to because of disposal. there's so many laws and rules and regulations around how to properly dispose of these things that you can't just throw them out. I wish
you
could.
Can just dump it, but you shouldn't. Because those chemicals leak into the environment. It's not safe. It's just not great. Yeah.
Some companies like Eco ATM, so I don't know how many of them there are in the world anymore, but they take back your devices. And then there's this green truck.
The green truck.
It sounds very vague. It's green as an environmentally friendly take back, donation / charity drop off thing near me in my neighborhood that I go to. So there's
check your local stuff. Local governments usually have every couple of months we'll have an electronics recycling day. Bring a pile of stuff, dump it there, erase your hard drives if you can. I would not you can sell some things, but I am so lazy, Sherlyn. The hassle of being I'm going to take a photo of this. I'm going to list this. Maybe I'll get $20. That's not... Just get it out of my life. I will, in fact, pay you money to get it out of my life, which is the TaskRabbit thing of just And I would feel bad about it, too, because it was it was when I was early, often starting stuff, and companies were not taking devices back. So I would, get a big box of old things, cables, whatever. And, somebody in a nicely dressed... I feel bad for these TaskRabbiters. But somebody will come. That's the job. Please take this box to this place. Thank you. Get it out of my life. And it costs money, but it was worth it to me at that point. So anyway, all good stuff.
I hope you had some good answers. Mark did say in the chat that he's going to go read that article. A lot of other people in the chat are giving good advice to dude named Charlie and George Morgan have mentioned interesting places to do it. So definitely let us know, Mark, if you feel like we've addressed.
I think this is a good shout out to, hey, pay attention to your local community. What is happening to you nearby? People have these events, but also maybe get to, if you often have electronic stuff, you should know the local geeks who are maybe taking in old hardware or local repair shops or stuff like that, where you could just be like, here's an old thing. Can you repair it? Take it for free, please. That's a whole thing. Okay, let's move on to what we're working on for the week. Anything you want to add, Sherlyn? You're working on everything at this point.
Earlier in the live chat, Mark Dell asked if things are calming down. No, they are not.
No,
they're very much not. We've got the Vendras about to talk about. Microsoft Build is coming up, and we got a lot of prep for that behind the scenes, as well as just lots of other things that we still can't talk about happening at the end of the month. And we've got WWDC next month. I would like to breathe.
You'd like to breathe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know. We would all, please, deep breath. Breathe in through your nose, out through your mouth, everybody. Yeah. Let's do it all together.
How about you, Devendra?
I am prepping for Microsoft Build and also juggling a couple things I have to run around the same time, reviews and whatnot. But Build, I am playing out Sunday morning. We are getting ready for all sorts of stuff happening at Build. Briefly, I can tell you, we're expecting those consumer service PCs, where there have been a couple of rumors, especially from The Verge and others, saying that Microsoft is really betting on Qualcomm chips, these new Snapdragon X Elite chips. They say they're faster than the M3 MacBook Air. Remains to be seen. I hear the emulation is better. Okay, prove it to me, Microsoft. I'm really, really suspicious about a lot of this stuff, but we expect to see some new machines. There's going to be a lot of AI stuff, AI all the time from Microsoft over here. These companies at this point are just it's almost like AI is a god, right? It's like AI is a god, and they're like, these are our offerings. All our resources, please, please, almighty
worship
AI.
Worship at the foot of AI.
Yes,
yeah.
give us everything. Give us all the customers. Give us your data. It feels really weird. And Microsoft was one of the first companies to kind of go all in on this, with the surprise Bing Chat announcement last year, Sherlyn, that you covered. But I think that really, that whole thing really woke everybody up. It certainly woke Google up to be like, oh, crap, we got to productize our AI, which they did. And it was bad early on and it's slowly getting better. But Microsoft was last year spent its entire year committing to Copilot and AI. So we're going to see the fruits of that labor this year. We're going to see what Microsoft is doing to make you care about AI. I subscribed to Copilot Pro for a couple months and I got nothing from it. The Copilot prompts were a little faster. It was cool to see slightly nicer DALL-E images, but those are parlor tricks, right? They're not functionally making my life better, but there are AI things that are making my life better, like transcription products. I've talked about Mac Whisper. I've talked about there are various online products right now, especially for podcasters and
Otter.
Content creators. Okay. Otter. Mm-hmm. Otter AI is one. It does AI transcription, but also Descript and other things. AI tools will be really useful. So the question is, like, how will these companies like pitch that, but also not be like, we are also worshiping AI and AI is magical, and we're really just prepping for the eventuality of augmented general intelligence, which is the sort of like singularity thing that people have been waiting for forever. Don't know if that'll ever happen, but certainly AI will do more and more things and probably put more and more people out of work. So this is going to be an interesting build. I think that's my main takeaway here. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll point out that Brandon Styles in the chat said this is the gold rush era of AI. And you know what? Yeah, the Gemini era, the gold rush era.
That was the gold rush. But also the question is it just a gold rush, or is it like, oh crap, oh crap, this is actually a thing? Because we've been through several gold rushes. We've been through the crypto crush, basically, which made some people a lot of money, but was not like world changing. We've been through the NFT garbage and Web 3.0 and everything. That was the worst one because it was literally nothing. We're already seeing AI like tangibly make features better and do things better. Like there are things I was doing recently where I was like, man, it is really nice to be using Descript to like generate social videos, like auto transcribe and put text on the video and just make it nice. That stuff can be good and makes you feel super empowered as a user. And I think that's what people want with their computer. So yeah, I think people are going to be into some of these things. We'll see what happens with Build. Do you have any pop cultural picks for the week, Sherlyn? I know you were...
Yeah, something. So this past weekend, I was introduced to / watched a very harrowing movie that I looked and it apparently scored very highly on Rotten Tomatoes. So, Devendra, have you heard of this movie called 71?
71?
I know. It's interesting, right? Okay, good, good. Very cool. You.
I don't know. British... Yeah, this is a British movie. Yeah, the Jack O'Connell one. I have heard of this. I have not seen this one. Yeah.
Okay. It is a British thriller film from 2014. So
thriller film, as they're called. Yes.
But now in 2024 era, I guess, notable for being actually the debut like film performance for one Barry Keoghan, who of Saltburn fame, I guess.
Yes.
So if you think Barry Keoghan was good in Saltburn / Marvel's The Eternals, check out 71.
Nobody was good in Marvel's The Eternals. What are you talking about?
No. Whatever. This is basically...
He was great, but yes.
Oh, yeah. This film was set in Northern Ireland. It's it's a fictional story of a British soldier who, was separated from his unit. I'm reading off of Wikipedia right now, but he was separated from his unit during a riot in Belfast at the height of the Troubles in 1971. So this was the Republic, the Protestant versus the Catholics sort of like, quote, troubles in Ireland area, North England also. So, just wow, gripping and really just kind of gory at times. The accent's not the easiest to follow, but damn, it's a powerful movie. So if you're looking for something, you know, very military, very, well, I don't know if military is officially the word for it because, yes, it's the British Army.
It's like a war story. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a war story. Thank you. And you're looking for a very bloody ride full of intrigue and betrayal. That's the one for you. 71. Enjoy.
Okay. Enjoy as we will. I have a recommendation for you guys. It is one of the worst movies ever made, but I do think, Sherlyn, you may get a kick out of it. Over at the Filmcast, my movie podcast, we do this thing called the Summer Movie Wager. The person who wins has to force us all to watch something. So the person who won last year, Peter Serretta, the founder of SlashFilm.com, made us watch Fateful Findings, which is a movie by independent director Neil Breen. It is one of the worst things I've ever witnessed. It is a laughable movie. It is badly written, terribly shot. Like, it doesn't follow any rules of movies, but it's so bad that after a point, I was like, oh, this is actually kind of hilarious how terrible it is. Sherlyn, I think you will actually get a kick out of it. If you want to feel
fateful
like a little
findings?
Fateful Findings, you can only buy it at Neil. You can buy it at Neil Breen's website, fatefulfindings.biz. You can also rent it for $15 from a variety of services. You can also, if you use Google and you're aware of certain services that archive the internet, you may also be able to find this movie there, because it is just floating around the internet. So just putting that out there. This is a terrible movie about a man who gains superpowers when he's 8 years old and as an adult, uses those superpowers to hack government and corporate networks to unveil the secrets of society and hold people accountable. Neil Breen, I think, is a complete narcissist, but it's kind of fascinating because he essentially casts himself. He's the director, the writer, the producer, the everything for this movie. He casts himself
familiar as, with the territory
as a messiah. Like, I have all the solutions for the world. And he has written this terrible story where it's multiple things. He's a person who has superpowers. He can teleport. He can survive car crashes, Sherlyn. He has, like, super healing capabilities. He's super smart. He can hack any network around the world. It's terrible. Everything about this movie is terrible. But if you watch it with a bunch of friends, I do think you'll have a good time. Like, it is one of those... It's sort of like The Room in the way The Room was terrible, except The Room even had, like, competent shots, like, competent storytelling.
So, like, Love on a Leash.
Yeah, this is... fully bad. One of the worst things I've ever seen. It is as if an alien came down to Earth and had never seen the movie before, and you were like, hey, alien, make a movie. And you describe what a movie is to them, they would make something like this. So, Fateful Findings, I think we all need a laugh right now. You can find this thing on the internet. Do not pay for it, but you can find this thing around, and it is hilarious.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter. Where else? Blue Sky, Mastodon, everywhere. I'm on Threads, but don't ping me on Threads, please. I also chat about movies and TV at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me your favorite accessibility features in all kinds of tech products, I would really appreciate that. You can send it to me on Twitter /X at Sherlyn Lowe or Sherlyn Instagram on Threads, or just email me chr@engadget.com. Email us your thoughts about the show at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If one of you farts, the other will smell it. I'm just saying.